So today we're going to continue the topic we began last week, which is we were speaking of biblical parenting. So this will be part two of that particular series, part two on biblical parenting. And where we're going to begin is just to keep in mind here, the Bible does not have a great deal of information about parenting. God's plan is to bring many sons to glory, but God doesn't give us a huge amount of details about parenting. He does give us principles, several major principles, which we're going to talk about today, and he gives us some basic instruction of how to work with our children, and we'll go through that not today, but eventually. But these principles we're going to talk about are central to success within parenting. And some of them I was aware of as our kids were growing up, and some of them not. So I'm glad I know them now, but I wish I had known them then. So, you know, you sometimes learn things that, I wish I had known that back then. And knowing how to parent is something that we aren't born with. It's something that we have to acquire, and God gives us his word in order that we can dig through it and dig out the nuggets that are going to help us in that responsibility. So I'd like to begin speaking about parenting in Psalm 127, verse 3. Psalm 127, verse 3. And this is a crucial concept to keep in mind, and it's interesting how this applies to child rearing. But you know, as we raised our kids, I never thought about this. I thought about part of this, but I never thought about the application of these verses. Psalm 27, beginning in verse 3. It says, "Behold, children are a heritage from the Lord. The fruit of the womb is a reward." And to have children is a great blessing. You look at various individuals in the Bible, outstanding individuals, and some of them had great difficulty in having children. And they longed for children, and God did in time reward them with children. And children are a wonderful thing, a wonderful blessing. Not every day of their lives, but overall they are. And so, you know, my kids thankfully have grown to the point where most of the time they're enjoyable. And there are days when they're not. And that's just the way we are as human beings. It's, you know, like you may love somebody, but they may be less lovable some days than others. So anyway, it says, so they are a heritage from the Lord, and God gives them to us to raise them and to guide them and to play a part in preparing them to be a part of God's family forever. That's what God's working out. And we as parents are the ones who have been commissioned to guide them and direct them and help them to grow up. And God has a certain outcome that he wants as we work with our children. I mean, he wants godly offspring. He wants them to grow up and ultimately to be a part of his family. And that's a tremendous responsibility we have as fathers and mothers. And it's a very important responsibility, as we'll see. It says, like arrows in the hand of a warrior, so are the children of one's youth. Now, I understood that, you know, they're like arrows, but I never ever thought about that I'm supposed to launch those arrows in a certain direction. I just thought about, my quiver's full with two, and that I didn't think much beyond that. But it's obvious as you begin to think about that your children are arrows. And just as you, if you were a hunter and you were raising children, those you would use those arrows in a specific way. You want a certain outcome. You're going to aim them. You're going to draw your bow. You're going to let the bow go, and that arrow will launch toward whatever target you want them to go to. So that's something that we have to keep in mind, that they're in your quiver as parents, and where do you want your children to go? What outcome do you want for your children? God wants the outcome of them having an eternal relationship with him. And that's the outcome he wants us to direct those arrows toward, to help our children to see the magnificent plan of God and to come to understand their part in it. It says in verse 5, happy is he, the man who has his quiver full of them. So, as I said, not every day we're happy to have our quiver full, but most days we are. And you know what? As you rightly direct the arrows, then it's much easier to be happy about having those children, because you see that they're going in the right direction, and the right outcome that God wants is a potential for them. It says at the end of the verse, they shall not be ashamed, but they shall speak with their enemies in the gate. You know, we want our children to grow up, to mature, to be able to stand on their own two feet, and to be godly people. We want them to be a part of God's family. We want them to be a part of the church. And we play a part in that. We can't ensure that outcome because they're free moral agents. But we can do a lot toward them moving in that direction. So they're in our quiver. We're like the bowman, and we can pull our bow back, and we can launch them. The question is, where do we want them to go? Do we want them to go in a godly direction? Do we want them to go in a direction that's going to be conducive to eternal life? That's up to you and me as parents, and it's a major responsibility. And one thing that we need to keep in mind is this: good citizenship. We want them to be good citizens of our nation. We want them to be good citizens of their community. We want them to be good citizens in the church. And whether they're good citizens or not begins at home. Good citizenship begins at home. It's part of the way that we direct our children. A parent with this approach knows that they are raising an adult as they deal with the child. You're keeping in mind the target. I want them to grow up to adulthood, and I want them to be successful. Most importantly, I want them to be successful Christians. As you look in Proverbs chapter 22, verse 6, it gives us a fundamental principle that goes along with this idea of being good citizens. Proverbs chapter 22, verse 6. There it says, train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. It's so we have the responsibility of training up our children in the way they should go. So you're directing that arrow in the way that they should go, which is God's way of living. So it's our responsibility to teach them those values and those truths and to participate in their lives in a way that's going to be conducive to that. And there are certain things we can do that are going to help that along, and there are certain things we can do that aren't going to help it along. And as I think about this, you know, the arrows in your quiver and being directed, I think we wanted our children to grow up and to continue in the faith, but I don't think I fully understood this particular verse as much as I do today. So it's better to learn at 69 verse in, but it would have been better about 24, 25, 30, but that didn't happen. So anyway, we had a little bit different view of this particular verse. You know, well, we figured they're going to leave the church and they're going to go their separate ways and maybe they'll come back to it, or, you know, there are various interpretations on this, but the interpretation God wants us to see is that we want to train our children in the way that they should go, which is God's way. And it's our job to pass that along. And it's a crucial role that we have, because as we show them that way and point them at that target, then when they're old, they're going to continue in that way. And hopefully they're going to continue in that way throughout their lives, and as they have their own children, they're going to be passing it along to them to help them understand that way of life. 60 to 70 years ago, home and family were a character education classroom in which parents were teachers and children were students. So if you go back in the history of America, back to the turn of the century and the 20s, that period of time, one of the things that was focused upon was character development. As you look in 2020 and 21, character development is not what it's about. But it was back then, and parents sought to help their children develop good character. If you remember back to the 1950s and 60s and 70s, you know, many of us were part of an organization that really emphasized character development. And that was a product of where America had been and what was important in America. And some of us went to Ambassador College, and what was it about? It was about developing character. That's what it was about. And that is still something we need to focus upon. So the things that were taught in this particular classroom of the family, they were taught respect. Respect for the fundamental dignity of every human being, which children develop by first learning respect for other people. To be respectful of others was fundamental to the teaching. And to recognize people that are in authority, and to recognize that beginning with parents. You know, the fifth commandment was central to this particular training, to be respectful of parents, and to teach them that, and to be respectful of legitimate authority. Second thing is responsibility, and responsibility in two important senses. First, accountability for one's actions. So you were teaching your child that if you do the crime, you have to do the time. And if you don't do the crime, you do what's right, then the blessing is yours. But you would teach them that, don't do that, because there's going to be a consequence to it. And so if they did do what you asked them not to do, then there were consequences, which was good for them to learn. And you didn't shield them from the consequences, so they were accountable. So if you asked them to clean their room, and you got you as a mother or father were at work, and you got home and they hadn't cleaned their room, excuse me, didn't I ask you to clean your room? Yes, you did. Well, why didn't you do it? You've all probably been through that kind of a grilling as your mom and dad ask you these questions, and I got carried away watching TV, or I was playing with my friends, and you say, well, didn't I ask you to do it? So if I ask you to do it, then I expect you to do it. One particular approach to that was the parent would tell their child, you need to do this. And the expectation was you would do it. And if you didn't do it, it was interesting, the mom did it for them. But there was a consequence. I did it for you this time, and there is a consequence. You got to pay the price. But so in the future, if I ask you to do it, please do it. And then, well, Mom, I won't do it again. Well, too late. So whatever the consequence might be, you know, you're not going to be able to do this. You're going to have less TV time, whatever you chose as the consequence. So they learned that they're accountable for their own actions. And a lot of kids growing up today aren't. And basically, there's no consequence when a consequence is something that's good for them to learn when they're young. Secondly, as part of responsibility is to willingness to carry out tasks assigned by authority figures. So if you're asked to do it, then you learn to do it. So when you're on the job and your boss says, I want you to clean the storeroom, guess what? I'm supposed to clean the storeroom, but I don't want to. Well, he's your boss, and he's expecting you to do it. And most of the time, bosses are unhappy if you don't fulfill that. The third thing that was taught at home was resourcefulness. A hang in there, tough it out, try and try again attitude that occurs as we go through the challenges of life. You don't just quit, you stick with it. You stick with it. And how many of us have gone through things we didn't like? I don't want to keep doing this. And we stuck with it and eventually got over the hurdle. I know that the thing that I always remember most about that was my mom, for some reason, wanted me to learn to roller skate. And so she bought me a set of roller skates, those old ones with the key They're metal, got the metal wheels on them, and they didn't flow really good, but they did roll. And so she said, you're going to learn to roller skate. So she made me go out of the house, and we had a long driveway, so I had to skate up and down that driveway, and it was cement, and I fell many a time. And I remember crying and thinking how bad my mom was and making me do this. But eventually I learned to roller skate. Now, I didn't learn to roller skate to the extent that I was a star, but I could go in a straight line and not fall all the time. So in that sense, my mom was wise. Okay, you're going to do this. It's not the greatest thing in the world, but you're going to learn how to do it. And it was good for me to do it. And it's good for you to challenge your children. You need to give them challenges. So you clean your room, you clean the bathroom or whatever, and you check their work. This isn't going to get it. Oh, man. And you know they're going to be happy when you tell them they didn't do a good job. No, I never was, and I still am not. So when I hear that you didn't do a good job, then I'm hopefully more adult now. But you need to hear it. You need to be corrected from time to time. And you learn to surmount challenges. So my parents didn't coddle us, but there were certain things that they could have said, you're going to have to do it. I'm not going to do it for you. Really? You're going to make me do it on my own? Yes, I'm not doing it for you. So they did more things than they should have, and thankfully I was able to learn some of that. So from this core emanates all the more specific attributes of character. For instance, honesty. You learn to be honest. You learn to be honest, and that comes about as a result of having responsibilities and having respect for other people. You learn charity comes about when people realize their responsibilities to the larger community, and especially to those less fortunate. You're not the center of the universe, and it's a good thing to learn that there are other people out there, and they do not have all the blessings that I have, possibly. And I need to learn to share and think of other people. There's charity, which acknowledges the dignity of every human being, regardless of his or her circumstances. You're willing to give, you're willing to help someone that's in need. And you learn other things like frugality and compassion and industry and self-restraint. All of these things are crucial to a successful life. And we teach them in the home. The older generation endowed their children with respect for others by teaching them good manners. Good manners and that from an early age. And good manners used to be a regular part of life. You held the door open for ladies, and you were respectful, and you said yes, yes, ma'am, and no, ma'am, and you said thank you and please, and all of those things were just essential to life. But many people don't learn those things at this stage of the game, and they're important things to learn. I think probably one of the most vivid recollections of being respectful of those who are older than you was my cousin, who was probably a head, shoulders above my grandmother. And so my cousin did something she didn't like, and he was a grown man, and she was talking to him and telling him, you're going to do this, and you need to do that, or whatever it was, but she was not pulling any punches and laying it out there. And you know what he said? The whole way through, he said, yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. And he understood. He didn't get all angry with my grandmother. I'm sure he didn't like it, because I was kind of watching this and I thought, whoa, she means business. But he took to heart what she said to him. And that's something that is crucial to learn to be respectful. And sometimes you don't like it, but it's good for you to learn that. And you learn that in the home. So the older generation all but ensured that their children would develop a resourceful attitude because they didn't do things for them. So guess what? If they have a math problem, do you do their homework for them? You can, but they don't learn anything through that experience. So you maybe help them on one problem, and then after that, you're on your own. I remember this wasn't a parent, but this was a teacher. I was not getting algebra, so I went in and talked to the teacher, and he said, okay, go up to the board. So while he's there in the class, and you know, this was after hours, so he said, work it out, put it on the board. And he would kind of give you a little nudge, but he would not solve it for you. So I learned how to do algebra. Now, I've forgotten every last bit of that, but at the time, I was able to solve the problems and learn to solve some of them on my own, and that was a good thing. And so by not doing everything for your children, you help your children to learn. So these are all things that the older generation used to teach and is not taught so much anymore. But it's important for us as Christians to seek to impart those things to our children, all of the things that we've talked about so far. So how should you're married, you have children, how should you approach child rearing? Let's go to Genesis chapter 2, verse 24. Genesis chapter 2, verse 24. And Genesis chapter 2, verse 24 gives us the first principle of parenting. It gives us the first principle of parenting, and that is parenting as one flesh. Genesis chapter 2, verse 24. It says in Genesis chapter 2, verse 24, therefore a man shall leave his father and mother and be joined to his wife, and they shall become one flesh. So they are to become, as husband and wife, one flesh. That means that they are one sexually and they are one in all other aspects of life. They are a team. They're working together in unity to accomplish the purpose for their particular family. And this is the way that you approach child rearing, because the child is not the mother's child or the father's child. The child belongs to both of the parents, and the best way to approach the child is by being one flesh. So the question is, how do we approach child rearing as one flesh? It means that you have to be one flesh as a husband and wife to begin with. And that's crucial to the success of your marriage and your family and your children. You have to be one flesh in that relationship. And you have to be one flesh as husband and wife. And so this is before you have children. You're one flesh with your mate. And then after you have children, you're still one flesh. And you're working with your children as one flesh. It doesn't stop with having children. You're not to be one flesh until you have children. But sadly, that's how a lot of people operate. It's something that must be ongoing as you work with your children. You're working together in unity and harmony as you work with the kids. So, and you have to realize that that never changes. The idea of one flesh is not something that ends when your children are born or they reach a certain age. You are to be one flesh at every stage of your marriage and in working with your children. And as you think about being one flesh, that means that you're going to work together as one in dealing with your children. Now, a question that you could ask in regard to being one flesh, think about your life as you worked with your kids this week. Of the time you spent in your family during the past week, what percentage was spent in the role of father or mother? What percentage of your time was spent as a father or mother versus the percentage of your time where you were husband or wife? Does it matter? It does. It's very crucial. God's giving you an instruction there in Genesis chapter 2, verse 24, of being one flesh. And it is the approach that's going to get the best results. So when many times as a fellow who's a works with families and parenting, when he asked most groups this question, what's the percentage of time that parents spend focused on their children? For most of them, 90%. 90% of their time is focused on their children, and only about 10% is focused on being a husband or wife. And as we'll see, that's not a good thing. Really, you need to spend pretty much about 60% of your time focused upon your marriage. About 60% of your time focused on your marriage and 40% on child rearing and working with your kids. And because the best thing that you can do for your children is to let them know that your marriage is strong. Can any of you recollect back to your childhood and your parents happen to have an argument? They're having an argument, and maybe it's even heated, and you're thinking, uh-oh, this is not going well. This is not going to be a good outcome. And you begin to think as a child, this is not good, and are my parents going to divorce? Are they going to separate? Is it, you know, so you don't know. You're just a child, but you observe this. And I know I thought that thing sometimes. My parents didn't fight a lot, but there were some occasions when they were arguing, and I thought, oh, man, this isn't good. And you could recognize that maybe this is not going to work out well, and it worries you as a child. So a child who sees his parents not being husband and wife, it actually undermines them. The best thing that you can do for your children is to let them see that you and your husband or wife love each other, that you love each other, and that you are working together as a team. Because as your children see that you love your husband, you love your wife, and that you two are in this together, it helps them. It gives them stability. And so it's crucial that you take that approach in dealing with your children. And this is what God tells you. Operate as one flesh. And it's the way you approach the way you deal with your children. And like I said last time, I said if you depart from God's way of life, there will be consequences. There's a price to be paid. So you can say, I don't need to do that. Well, I'm not telling you. That's what God said. So the question is, how do I raise my children as one flesh? So as you think about this, we want to see how we can best do this. And are there adjustments in the way that we approach our children where we can work together as one? So you want to basically parent from within the marriage. You want to parent within the marriage. And as I was looking at some information that I was reviewing, how many of you remember Leave It to Beaver? Leave It to Beaver, okay? Now, as you think of June in that particular program, usually when her husband, Ward, got home, she was, you know, in dirty clothes, you know, she's sweaty, her hair's all messed up. Is that how June was? No, amazingly, she looks pretty good every time. Now, that's hard to do all the time. But, you know, when your husband comes home from work, who are you? Are you a mother or are you a wife? And it's important that you would welcome your husband or your wife and approach them as husband and wife. And your kids need to be able to see that you love each other. So, you know, they'll always, you know, if you're a husband or wife kiss, the kids are all going to go, ooh, you know, and they're all repulsed by that. But you know what? They may say that, but it's important for them to see that. It's important to see that you love each other and you have a positive relationship with each other. And you need to approach this in that way because it creates stability for them. So we want, and this is how God planned it. For the marriage to raise the children means husband and wife are of one flesh and one mind where the children are concerned. And you're both in harmony with the goals that you have. So both of you recognize that you have this quiver full of children, and you want to direct those children toward a godly outcome. And you're working together to accomplish that purpose. And so you have two minds that can be applied to how to deal with the children. And you're both in agreement, and you're both working together with them. Have any of you ever experienced, if you have more than one child, that your children will seek to manipulate husband and wife? My kids learned that on some issues, I was easier than my wife. On other issues, my wife was more stick, you can't do that. So they learned that, and you know what they would do? They would ask me about certain things that I was easier on, and they would talk to my wife about certain things that she was easier on. So how do you defeat that? You have to make sure you talk. Now, Bobby was asking me if he can take the car out tonight. You know, he's 8, he's 15. Can he take the car out on a date? Can he do that? Well, you know that that's not going to happen. So you need to make sure you're on the same page. And if husband says no, wife should say no. They come to an agreement on how they're going to deal with the children. So you talk it over and you make a plan and you make that plan and exercise that plan as one flesh. So as you take this approach, it's going to help your children immensely. It's going to help them to be stable and to hear one voice, not two voices, because children are smart and they also have carnal nature and they're very quick to be able to divide and conquer. And you have to be on the same page, both of you working together for that particular outcome. So if you have a disagreement, then you need to talk about it and work it out where you are in unity and harmony. And you know, as you think about your marriage, you know, your marriage as husband and wife doesn't come to an end once you have children. So before you had children, you two used to do things together. You went out on things called dates. You may have gone on vacation together before you had children. So does that come to an end when you have children? It shouldn't. We all need to continue to take care of our marriage. We need to continue to date our wives. We need to continue to do things together as husband and wife. Not always as mother and father. And there need to be times when your kids don't go. If we're going out on a date, taking your kids on the date, you didn't do that before you were married. There are times when you might. But you and your husband or your wife spend time together, just the two of you talking and enjoying one another. And this is an important example for your children. And it's one that we put into action. As you look at what happens when you have kids and so you have children, where is a wife's mind once you have children? Is it on the husband? In all too many cases, it's not. She's focused on the children. She's focused on the children, and what happens many times is the husband's sort of left out. Now, there's a time when that's unavoidable, but to neglect your relationship as husband and wife is going to undermine your marriage. Have you ever noticed that people, once the last child leaves home, what often happens? They divorce. Now, why is that? Because they have no relationship. They've let their relationship die. Instead of taking the time to replenish their relationship as they're going along. So it's important that you take time to go on a date, to spend time together alone from the children. It's not that you don't love them. But it's a good example for them to help them to understand how important your marriage is. And without a successful marriage, your children are going to struggle. Have you ever noticed that children who are the product of a divorce, there's always damage there. You may not intend damage, but it occurs. And it may not be your fault, but it's hard on children. And all these people tell you divorce doesn't matter, kids are really resilient, but you have to realize it affects them, whether they display it or not. So take the time to spend with each other in your marriage, because it's going to greatly benefit your children as time goes on. So the next principle is, you know, and something that you need to keep in mind is that you're going to make that marriage work. And by your putting the time and effort into your marriage, it's going to benefit your children. Now, you may say, well, I'm divorced, or I'm a single parent. How do I deal with this? Well, you have to put more effort into it as you raise your children. For instance, when one unmarried parent is concerned, one can be regarded as either one half of two or a whole number. You can be broken or not. And you have to make certain choices about where you're at in raising your children as a single parent. And so if you're raising your children as a single parent, you don't want to be split or any of that. You want to be, keep in mind the bigger picture. Consider the following. Single parents must make sure they do not get wrapped up in their kids so that they lose their individuality, their identities, and they fail to meet their own needs. You still have needs and responsibilities and things as a single parent. So you have to keep that in mind in the way that you work with your children. Your children cannot be your sole focus. You still are an individual, and it's not that you don't love your children, but you want to take the best approach to them. So, you know, you don't have the choice of, you don't have a husband there to help you, so you have to make certain choices. So if you are a single parent, you need to find your own life. You need to do some things that you enjoy and have relationships that are not just your children. And it's not disrespectful toward your children, it's a matter of you have a life beyond your children. And you seek to love them and take care of them and try to find a balance, which sometimes is hard to do. So single parents need to give themselves permission to pursue interest and relationships that do not include their children. So if you just solely focus on your children as a single parent, then that's not really sending them the best message. But sometimes there's no choice. There's no choice, you know, because of your particular circumstance. But you try to do the best that you can to live by the principle of loving and caring for your children in a balanced way. So as you go about raising your children, keep the one flesh instruction as a guideline and take care of your children within your marriage. You and your spouse working together in how you take care of those children. So that's a, you know, not lots of information on that, but it is a general principle we need to keep in mind. The second point is this. It's found in Deuteronomy chapter 6, verse 6, and the most important principle that you're going to teach your children is the importance of character. The importance of character. Character comes first. Deuteronomy chapter 6, verse 6 begins a discussion of the importance of character and how character comes about. Deuteronomy chapter 6, verse 6, it says there, "And these words which I command you today shall be in your heart." So the words that God has given to us in the Bible, they're to be in our hearts. "You shall teach them diligently to your children, and shall talk of them when you sit in your house, when you walk by the way, when you lie down, and when you rise up. So God's way of life and God's truth is to be a part of your life to such an extent that it's on your mind and on the tip of your tongue, and you use the instruction that you've been given to teach your children. Verse 8, you shall bind them as a sign on your hand, and they shall be as frontlets between your eyes. You shall write them on the doorpost of your house and on your gates. You want the word of God to be written in your heart, not just to be physically on the wall or on a door or a fence, a post around the door. They're to be a part of your life. And God gave this instruction to the people of Israel, and they were to be focused on the Word of God, and they were to teach the Word of God. It was something that was to be a part of their life on an ongoing basis. And what this passage is doing is telling us as parents that our fundamental purpose is to see that our children become people of character. Our chief responsibility is to work with our children to help them to become people of character. So you're going to be dealing with them on a day-to-day basis. So what are you teaching them? You know, are you teaching them to tell the truth? Are you concerned with that? My parents were never big on lying, and if I did and they caught me in a lie, there was a price to be paid. A serious price to be paid. So we want to make sure we teach our children to tell the truth. We want to teach them to be honest. I know that, I can always cite myself as a failure on different things, but there was a time when I was going to school in Charlotte, North Carolina, and there were some thugs who attended school, and the school where I did, they were bigger, stronger, faster, and all of that. So basically, they were holding me up for my lunch money every day. So then that was an unpleasant experience, and I wasn't big enough to take them. But anyway, they had one of the things that I did was I decided that I would go to this little store, and I would buy, it was called a pig in a poke. So you would get this thing, and you didn't know what was in there. But anyway, I had the lunch money to be able to buy that. So I did that, and I told my mom, that this guy cheated me at the store. So knowing my mom, she said, well, we're going down to that store, and we're going to find out what really happened here. So I thought, this is not going to go well. And so we marched down to the store, and my mom goes in there, and my son says that you cheated him, and the person says, no, we don't do that here. We wouldn't do that. And then you come under the gaze of your mom. Did this really happen? And then you had to fess up, and that was unpleasant. And what happened later was even worse. But anyway, you learned, don't lie, because it always catches up to you. And it did several times in my life. So you eventually learned, this does not pay off by lying to your parents. And you learn through that experience, don't lie to anybody. You don't have to make up a story. You don't have to try to fill in the gaps when you tell the truth. Just tell them, take the beating, move on. Don't try to deceive your parents. And so this is something that God is telling us, that there's a way of character that we want to learn and live by. And we come to understand why it's important through the experiences that we go through. So Deuteronomy 6 tells us that as parents, we are to take every possible opportunity to talk to our children about what's right and what's wrong. Take every opportunity to tell your children what's right and what's wrong. And you have the opportunity to point them as arrows in the right direction. And whether they're going to go in the right direction or not falls on you primarily. There does come a point where your children have moved on and they're free moral agents and they can do what they want. And they do. And they may not follow the directions that you've taught them as they've been raised. But while they're in your house, you can point them in the right direction and teach them what's right and profitable. So God's telling us as parents to discipline even our children's thoughts, because where does sin come from? It begins in the mind. And your children are thinking, and they have the opportunity to make choices. And if you've been teaching them what's right and wrong, then they have to make a choice between what's right and wrong. And so you need to point them in the right direction and be willing to teach them and show them the right way. What does God tell us? As you look at Matthew chapter 5, it says, where does hate come from? It begins in the mind, and it plays itself out in real life. He tells you, where does adultery come from? It begins in the mind. So you have to realize that your children are thinking, and they're thinking about what they want, and they do have carnal nature. It begins early. And so lying is just something that comes with the territory, but you've got to point them in the right direction. You know, like it says in Matthew chapter 5, you know, the sin begins in your heart. It begins in your mind as you think about it. A second scripture to think about is this in Proverbs chapter 22, verse 15. Proverbs chapter 22, verse 15. Now, you may think, this isn't my kid. Couldn't be my kid. My kid's perfect. My kid's wonderful. My kid's a little angel. And that may not be reality. You hope it's true, but many times it's not. I mean, if my mom and dad could see my brain, they would have known this kid's got problems and we need to keep on him and don't let him go. Proverbs 22, verse 15 says, foolishness is bound up in the heart of a child. The rod of correction will drive it far from him. So foolishness is bound up in the heart of a child, and the rod of correction will drive it far from him. So we're not going to get into discipline here, but this does not mean that you just beat your kids senseless. The rod of correction is a matter of you're pointing them in the right direction. It's a matter of correcting them, showing them the right path, and if they get off the path, to put them back on, help them get back on the path. It's not just beating them, you know. So this does not justify the only solution is beating your children. So I've got this big rod, and I remember that was a popular practice when I was young. So go cut they called them hickories where I came from. So you went and you cut a hickory and you brought it back to your mom. So if you ever went through that enterprise, did you bring back the best one you could find? You brought back one that's kind of flimsy and really isn't going to hurt that much. I mean, you were smart enough to figure that out. But your parent was also wise enough to say, that's just not going to cut it. So you go back and get another one and make sure it's going to do the job. So I got to get one that's more substantial. But that's the human mind at work, just in that very situation. So foolishness is bound up in the heart of children. They do things that sometimes it's unthinking, sometimes it's deliberate, and you have to try to make that determination and then put them on the right track. It says, parents, it's our responsibility to bring the power of discipline, which can be used in various methods. There are various methods of discipline, not just spanking. So we are to recognize that our children are thinkers, and that that's how God created them, and their thinking is not always exactly what it should be. So we have to correct them and try to keep them on the right track, and it gets tiresome. But it's something that we've made a commitment to. So children express their rebellious natures not only by misbehaving, but by deliberately doing contrary things and challenging statements made by their parents. You know, if you've raised kids, if you said the sky is blue, they tell you it's green? They deliberately tell you it's a different color? They're challenging your authority. You have to correct that. How you do that is your business, but you can't let that go. So they will challenge your authority, and I know that in our child rearing, We had one child that was extremely stubborn, and that child would constantly talk to you and try to come up with, I don't want to do that. So that child would talk to you and seek to convince you otherwise. No, you can't go out on this day. You can't do that. Well, what about this? And what about that? And you're just constantly having to deal with this and constantly being challenged. So maybe there was a better way, but we never figured it out. The best thing that happened was when this particular child left home. We rejoiced. And at this point, the child is not quite like that, but the pleasure is watching this child experience his own child, who is just about the same way and pretty tough. Woo. So anyway, I hate to see her as a teenager. It's going to be interesting. But he's having to go through that. And we did tell him repeatedly, what goes around comes around. And it is. So we pray for the best, but we also know that it's a lesson, some lessons he's going to have to learn as he deals with his children. So we can't let our kids get away with things, and we have to stay on top of them, and we have to point them in the right direction in a loving way. Why? Because by our parenting and our teaching them and our showing them the right way, it's going to help them to learn to what is the right way that is pleasing to God. And, you know, you have to challenge them sometimes with their emotional outburst. I know that my mom did not allow a lot of tantrums. I thought that my brother was involved in throwing a tantrum, and so he threw himself on the ground and started stomping his feet. And so he's laying down there and angry about what my mom was denying him. And I thought it was one of the best moves ever made, because my mom just got a cup, filled it with water, and threw it on him. So he's sputtering there and shocked by the fact that she did that. But I thought, wow, that was effective. And you know what? He never did that again. She did, and I thought, I'd never thought of that, but she just threw water on him, and he wasn't injured. He was just shocked. But it worked. I don't remember him throwing another tantrum. So not that he was afraid to get wet, but anyway, she put a stop to that. And those are things we have to be aware of. Our kids have to be, you know, we want them to be under control and to handle things, and being demanding and all of that isn't going to work, and you can't let them get away with it. So God is telling us as parents in Deuteronomy chapter 6 that they should be the number one influence in your children's lives. You as a parent can greatly impact them, and that's what God expects you to do. And you're to begin when they're young, and you're to carry that throughout the time that they're in your house. Once they leave your house, there's not much you can do anymore. Now, our kids left our house, but if we disagree with something, we do tell them. But they're adults, and they can make their own decision, and so we hear duly noted often. So I've made note of it, but I'm probably not going to do that. Well, we hope you will. We felt as your parents that we're still your parents. I'll always be your dad. Your mom will always be your mom. And, you know, my son especially hates the talks. We need to have a talk. Oh, man. You know, so anyway, he knows what the talk is, and it's grueling from his perspective. But we feel we need to say it. So we say our piece and we move on. But you are always their parent. You know, you're always her mom or his mom. You're always his or her dad. And there are times when you need to exercise that responsibility, even when they're grown up. And sometimes it's just a matter of saying, I don't think that's a good idea. And they have the opportunity to say, duly noted. Okay, we told you. So anyway, I don't think, and it's pretty hard to come back and say, yeah, you were right. Ooh, that's pretty tough. But sometimes, hopefully, they will do that. So we are their parents, and we are to be their chief influence. We are to guide them and direct them, and we are to do that throughout their lives. And if we don't take that responsibility seriously, is there anybody else who's going to influence them? Absolutely. There are a multitude of influences out there. I mean, the modern influencer is the phone. So the phone is, all kids have a phone, they're on the phone all the time, and what are they looking at? What are they being influenced by on that phone? You don't know. But it's a good idea to know. Well, that's private. Well, as long as you're living in their house, it probably isn't. So that's where you think about, maybe I shouldn't do this. Maybe I shouldn't look at that. Maybe I shouldn't send this. So you think about all of that before you do it. But you are their parent, and you have to take care of them and to love them. And sometimes it requires your being on top of what they're doing, because you want to influence them. You want them to follow the right path because it's going to be to their benefit. Not because you hate them, but because you love them and you want the best for them. So we never liked my parents setting limits on us. We never liked it. But you know what? I'm glad they did. We learned certain things. I know my mom was limiting me from hanging out with this one kid. She saw this kid and she said, you know what? This kid's trouble. I don't want you hanging out with this kid. What's wrong with him? Well, it's just, I can't tell you exactly, but don't hang out with him because it's not going to go well. So eventually she convinced me not to hang out with this kid, and it was the best input I've ever received, because unfortunately this kid was headed for trouble, and he did get into trouble, and I could have been there with him. And knowing how trouble impacted me, usually I was the one that got in trouble. You know, and so you do something and everybody else is doing it, but you're the person that's singled out and gets to go to the principal. There were 100 guys out here doing this. Well, I got you. So there we go, marching off to the principal and doing detention or whatever. And, you know, all that was good for me because I didn't enjoy it. And then I had to tell my parents what happened. Oh, what are you doing? Maybe not the best thing, but kids are kids. So take the time to know what your kids are doing, who they're hanging out with, and you don't want to overly restrict them, but you also want to make sure you know what they're up to. Because kids are, you know, have any of you learned that kids are sneaky? Kids are sneaky, and they have been, and that's carnal nature at work, but kids are sneaky. And you know, it's one of the things that was most interesting. As our kids grew up, they thought they were being sneaky and getting away with something. But you know what? Almost always we found out. And they're like, how did you figure that out? They were surprised. They knew they were doing something wrong, but they were surprised how you as a parent found out. And sometimes it wasn't because we were so smart. It's just we happened upon it. What's this? So anyway, you've got to be aware of what your kids are doing and love them and care for them and point them in the right direction. And if you've not noticed, children are not wise. They've not known. They don't have wisdom. Not yet. It's something they grow into, especially boys. Boys do crazy things. So you want to be on top of them because they want to go faster. They want to do things they shouldn't do, and it's going to get them in trouble. So you have to stay on top of them. So as you think about your children, you want to love them and care for them and point them toward Deuteronomy 6. So we see these various truths that God gives us. These aren't the only truths, but we'll probably continue this at a later date in order to help you better understand God's path and the path that you want to impart to your children. They are a blessing from God, and God has given them to you to teach, to prepare them for life. And so you want to plan so that they're going to fulfill that plan that God has for them, and you do the best that you can contribute to that. So we'll stop there, and we'll pick this up at a future date and seek to better understand what it means to be a parent and how we can best do that. To take these principles and apply them as you work with your children is going to bring the best results. And you know, as parents, sometimes you get weary being a parent, but it's the greatest job that you can ever have to influence somebody. And as you help your children learn about God's way of life and practice that way of life, there will be nothing more rewarding than that. So your children can bring you lots of grief and sadness, but your children can also bring you a great deal of joy as they begin to live and continue to live the way that God lays out for us. So hopefully you found that profitable.